The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Oh, if I could right now, I would have started the program by playing Taps and having a moment of silence. The Big Red Wave was not slaughtered in Wake County. Not so good across the state. Some highlights here and there, which we'll get to. Some highlights here and there around the country, but not nearly the party that the Republicans were expecting. With the Big Red Wave on my personal list of picks, 17 out of 51 won. That's a batting average of 330. I could make a good living in the Major League Baseball batting 330, but 33% in Wake County and statewide is horrible. And what does that mean? What does that tell us? Does that mean that Steve Noble is an idiot? I don't know what I'm talking about. Or is just the state at large an idiot? Or as we go county by county, are we just idiots at a county-by-county level? Michelle Woodhouse is back in the house. Michelle, good to see you. Long day yesterday.
Long day into the morning.
And here you are.
And I'm back having my second cup of coffee.
Yeah, well, we've got more of that, which I know you'll need, and I'll have some more myself. I was angry last night. Angry, disappointed. I was especially disappointed with the Wake County School Board, as big of a deal as what's going on in our schools. Is a place like Wake County and Raleigh, are we just giving over? Is it just Romans 1? We're going to talk about all that kind of stuff. But I was really angry and disappointed. I woke up this morning, and like we do in America, we go on to the next day. And that's a glorious thing that the country can operate and continue to operate. Most of us live our lives on a daily basis, fairly myopic. And what happens at the national level or the state level or even the local level doesn't really get us off that much on our mark in our daily lives. But today I'm kind of a Romans chapter one guy, which I usually am. I'll talk about that later. But what have you been experiencing? You've been a political operative for a while, ran in the primary for Congress yourself out in Western North Carolina. You know the ins and outs of politics and the GOP. What's been your reaction?
Well, I spent 4 hours on the radio here in Raleigh last night doing the returns live, and we were just watching things come in. And I think there were some surprises. I will tell you, though, between 11 p.m. when I got off the radio and 2 a.m. when I finally turned off the TV, it felt like 2008 for me. Mm. It was like watching Obama win,
yeah,
watching a shift in our country. And I think the big takeaway for me is, why didn't the message from the Republican side work? What did we miss? And are there some counties, if we look, and I know we're going to dig in nationally, but when we look at North Carolina in particular, is Wake County just lost? Is Mecklenburg County lost? Is Buncombe County lost? Orange, Durham, New Hanover, are those counties lost to Democrats? Buncombe County, out near where I live, Asheville, the San Francisco of the South, not one standing Republican. Wake County elected 3 Republicans, 2 to the school board, and Erin Perret held her seat.
Yeah, and 2 to the school board. All 9 seats were up. We had some incredible candidates. Most of them have been on the show. And with as hot of a topic as CRT, transgenderism, sexualization of our kids, what's going on in the school, not the least of which the problem is the learning loss the last couple of years. Wake County schools performing at levels we haven't seen so low since about 30 years. A huge school district, a huge train wreck, and even that's not enough.
Well, I think one of the things, and we talked about it before the show, when we look at, I mean, obviously we want to celebrate Senator Budd. I think Ted Budd's victory is a huge celebration, and we're going to see that seat already is going to control the balance of what happens in the Senate. The congressional races, big miss in North Carolina. Republicans lost 2 seats. We went to a 7-7 split, 7 Democrats, 7 Republicans representing us now. That should be 9-5, not 7-7. Then we look at the judicial races, and I think we can really celebrate the statewide judicial races.
Yep. Huge.
2 things that we have to learn from those races that we should be applying to our school boards. Number 1, as soon as the judicial races went partisan, Republicans started winning.
Yeah, because people don't understand. They don't do their homework. And most people go in and go, I'm going to vote for the R or the D. And if there's no R or D, like in the case of the Wake County School Board, then people are clueless. That's why so many people want my list, because they're not willing to do their own homework.
Well, they aren't.
And God bless you that took my list. I know you take it because you trust me. But overall, most people just won't do their homework.
Well, and counties can make their school boards partisan. Many counties across the state of North Carolina have, and those school boards went Republican. So, one, I think every county in the state of North Carolina, every resident needs to demand of their elected officials in the General Assembly, make our school board race partisan. It's not difficult for them to do that. Number two, the slate card that was used for the judicial races is the reason that every Republican on that card won statewide, and they all won by the exact same margin. It was within small percentages of one another, but it was very clear. If you voted for one Republican judge, you voted for all of them. So one,
and kudos to our buddy Mark Walker, who spent the last several months running a slate of conservative judges.
Absolutely.
And including the two that got on the Supreme Court, Richard Dietz, who was on yesterday, and Trey Allen, who was on last week.
Absolutely. And this is the second cycle we've run that slate card. And it's worked in those judicial races. Now we have control of the Supreme Court, which most people don't even yet know how critically important that is.
Right. Yep.
As we head into redistricting, voter ID, the right to life, born alive bills that we're going to see coming out of the General Assembly, the transgender sports bill, the court control is critically important. But if we can go to that model for our school boards going into the next round of elections, we can see a significant change. I think people want to vote for conservatives on their school board, but two things have happened. One, they don't know. And by the time they get to the school board, they're fatigued. They have run out of energy in their ballot because it's on the other side. It's at the bottom. There's a lot of people. Do I pick two? Do I pick three? Every county does it differently. It's very confusing. And the confused mind says no. And I think by then people just kind of pick.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to... We, as a party, and this is where I'm going to hold the GOP accountable, and I'll put myself right in that, the party has to do a better job of educating the low-information voter to vote for conservatives, because we're not doing a very good job of it.
Right.
And we miss the mark in many ways in North Carolina. We have some things to celebrate, but we have a lot of learnings to do. And nationally, we're going to have to do an autopsy.
Yeah. And in the school board, I'm just looking at one of them. Let's just look at... District 2 here in Wake County, Monica Johnson Hostler won with 19,775 votes. The conservative, Monica Ruiz, came in second place, 19,122 votes. That's about 653 votes difference. There's plenty of room to win there. Why didn't we? Because the county GOP is terrible. We'll be right back. I'll fix it later.
That's all right.
The Steve Noble Show here with Michelle Woodhouse. The day after the DOA, we're examining the patient. The body is dead.
It's autopsy time.
It's autopsy time. So what's going on? And a powerful point earlier, Michelle. And by the way, everybody, just a reminder. One of the benefits of being a follower of Jesus Christ is ultimately all this stuff falls by the wayside. There's the little K kingdom that we call Wake County or Raleigh or North Carolina or the United States of America. Then there's the big K kingdom. And the big K kingdom is not shaken. Okay, it's not. God still rules the universe with his feet up. And nothing is surprising him. He's not pulling his hair out. He's not doing what we're doing right now. He's not experiencing consternation and rage and anger. He knows what's going on, and he's ultimately in control. So remember that. So if you're a believer, I believe in lamenting. I'm a big fan of lamenting. We should lament over the case of this election and what's going on in our nation. We should lament over that. But make sure your house is not built on that sand. Your house needs to be built on the rock of Jesus Christ. And if it is, when the storms come and the wolf tries to blow your little house down, well, he can't. So whether it's Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis or Nancy Pelosi, whatever politician, you pick one. You want to go to tyrants. You want to go to Pol Pot. I don't care who you pick. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I'm dead already, so it doesn't really matter. He can't really do anything to me. So ultimately, I can live life a little bit footloose and fancy free, except for the fact that I have 340 million neighbors. And these races matter because they affect people. They affect the unborn and they affect the born. And so we live in those two worlds, Michelle. We've got one foot in the big K kingdom, one foot in the little K kingdom. I'm not tied to this place, but I care about this place and I'm a steward of it. So that's why we engage. But ultimately, I don't find my joy in what's happening in politics.
No, and you can't. And I think we're going to see, as we head into 2024, Trump makes an announcement next week that he's going to run. I think we all know that's coming.
Should he, though?
Not even
now. There's some talk out there and some pressure out there. Even a couple of the Trump suck-ups, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton, because when you have access to people, it kind of puffs you up. That, I mean, I know I'm sounding judgmental, but I'm probably fairly accurate. Even they're saying Trump should delay the announcement. Who you were watching Fox News. Some people were saying Trump should not say anything because we have a runoff in Georgia.
Yep.
Between Warlock, I call him Warlock, not Warnock, because he's a false prophet, and then Herschel Walker. So we got a runoff there, which is, doesn't this sound familiar?
Been here, done this.
And who train wrecked that process
Donald
last
Trump.
Time? Donald Trump. So here we are again. I think he should delay. He won't, though, because Donald Trump's ultimately more interested in Donald Trump than he is anything else. And I believe that he cares about the country. I really do.
I do, too.
But he cares about himself more. Operationally, I think.
Well, and you have people within the party.
And you can email me if you hate me because I'm beating up on Trump, but I don't care.
Well, I think there are people in the party that worship at the altar of Donald Trump. And Donald Trump was on the ballot nationwide yesterday.
Yeah.
He was 100% on the ballot. And you know, the celebration happening politically is with Democrats today. The North Carolina Democratic Party is celebrating. They were able to hold off a veto-proof mm-hmm. supermajority in the North Carolina General Assembly.
We got one in the Senate, but not the House.
Not the House. And we're going to talk about kind of how that works anyway. But they had some really key wins. And congressionally, Jeff Jackson, Don Davis, Wiley Nickel, those are huge wins for the Democratic Party, in addition to every Democratic incumbent winning in those yeah. congressional races. They were able to hold school boards. They picked up some sheriff's races. There were things that happened for the Democrats that, you know, they really were big wins for them in North mm-hmm. Carolina. A lot of, you know, the Republican pundits were focused at the top. And we haven't lost, we haven't had a Democrat senator in a long time.
Yeah.
You know, Kay Hagan. And you know, I think that we spend a lot of time and a lot of money there, and Republicans are horrible at playing the long game. Democrats are playing a short game and a long game.
They've been playing a long game educationally since the late 1800s.
Absolutely. And we're just, you know, catching up. But, you know, I said this yesterday on the radio, and I think, you know, you and I have talked about it so many times. You look at let's use Wake County, where it's where we're sitting right now, right? You've got crime as in a way that we've never seen it
yeah.
here. You've got gender issues happening in our school. I was trying to figure out exactly how to say that, but they're trying to gender assign our children
yeah.
in schools. Pornography in the classrooms.
Yeah.
You have
CRT,
social emotional learning, all kinds of chaos happening in Wake County. Wake County is blue. You have defunding the police. You have a police shortage here.
Yeah.
Yet you put a Democrat sheriff back in. It makes.
And you keep electing Democrats.
And you keep electing Democrats.
I mean, and nationally, obviously, it doesn't matter that we have 8.5% inflation, that our debt's going through the ceiling, that people can't afford. It's costing them $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 more to live the same life this year that they lived last year. And we've got the southern border. We've got what's going on in Washington, D.C. We've got CRT. We've got all the other stuff. And even that's not bad enough for people to change.
Well, I think that the big takeaway for the Republican Party is Republicans have to look at with that laundry list, and it wasn't even inclusive. I mean, that
right,
was just what
sure.
you whip off of the top of your head. Voters did not trust Republicans to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big takeaway for me. They didn't.
Because Mitch McConnell will just run on the fact that we're not Democrats.
Well, and usually in an off, you know, kind of an off cycle like this, a midterm, you just run against the other side.
Right.
And that's enough. Well, it isn't enough. And even with that, I think this is why I think Trump was on the ballot. Number one, the voters did not trust Republicans to fix the problems. And number two, they were so afraid that Donald Trump was going to be in charge again that they weren't willing to take that risk. So they would rather vote for someone like John Fetterman to serve in the Senate.
We're sending a mentally disabled man to the U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania.
Who looks like a bouncer at a strip club.
Right. Yeah, he's just it's got God help him. But that's a joke.
And that's a 6-year term.
6 years in the U.S. Senate.
And how does he win? And I know people will say, and they're probably already saying it on Facebook, fraud, fraud, fraud. Was there fraud? Probably somewhere in the midst of that. But the reality
but not
is
enough.
Pennsylvania has been voting since September.
Right.
Early voting isn't a month. It's maybe 5 days.
Yeah.
6 days. I'm a hardcore constitutionalist. I think you vote on Election Day and mm-hmm. only Election Day.
Me too.
But they were voting for a month before that debate. A month. 600,000 votes yeah. were already in before yeah. that debate. And so he wasn't a good candidate before his stroke. Yet, he's been running for 2 years. He's won statewide races before. He had a ton of money. And Pennsylvania put up a horrible candidate for governor. The Republican candidate was horrible. And Mehmet Oz, while a brilliant man, was, you know, that was a Trump handpicked.
Bad candidate.
Bad candidate. Pennsylvanians didn't want him. He's not from here. He, you know, he's from New Jersey. That was a bad, bad candidate. And we're going to pay for it. Yeah. We are going to pay for it because, let's just say, Nevada goes Republican, which it's looking like it's going to in the Senate. Arizona goes Democrat, which it's looking like it's going to in the Senate. It all comes down to Georgia.
Gee.
In that runoff,
that's not great.
It'll either be 50-50 if Herschel Walker wins, or we lose control of the Senate.
Man.
And yep. at the end of the day, we can't blame that on Democrats. We can't blame that on Joe Biden. We can't blame it on Kamala Harris. Republicans have to blame it on the party not getting out a message yeah. that we're going to solve problems for Americans.
That's right. And so it wasn't enough that the economy, all the other things we listed are a train wreck. It's not enough. You can't. This Mitch McConnell, they'll vote for us because we're not Democrats. Sorry, Mitch, you're wrong. You can't just be not the other side. You actually have to be something I can get excited about. And you have to have results, which is why Ron DeSantis won by 20 points. He slaughtered Chris. Because he proved that he's capable of managing and governing. We're here with Michelle Woodhouse. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Michelle Woodhouse in here doing a little post-op on the election from yesterday. Very, very disappointing, enraging, maddening on a lot of different levels. When we get to the fourth segment of the show, we're going to turn a little more theological in our direction and talk about Romans 1, which is, I know you guys, some of you are like, you're rolling your eyes. You're like, Steve, you always talk about Romans 1. I know, I talk about Romans 1 because it's accurate, it applies, and we have a lot of lessons to learn there, and we'll get to that in the fourth segment, but we're just kind of looking at a postmortem here. But in North Carolina, so we were going for 3-2-1. Pick up three houses in the House, pick up three seats in the House, two in the Senate, one, and flip control of the North Carolina Supreme Court. We got control of the North Carolina Supreme Court. We won two. That was awesome. Praise
the
Lord.
That was awesome.
In the Senate, we got a supermajority so that we could override the veto of Governor Cooper. But in the House, we're short.
Short one.
So what happens now? Is Cooper still large and in charge? Is there a way around this, Michelle? How does the Supreme Court factor in? So let's do that real quick, and then we'll focus national. And then the fourth segment will be a little more theological.
So it's an attendance policy, basically, just like, you know, when you were in college, if you showed up for class, maybe you got an extra point. So the way that the veto-proof supermajority works, it's all based on who's in attendance at the time of the vote. So if everyone shows up in the Senate and the House, we do not have a veto-proof supermajority. If someone is absent or a couple people are absent and they're Democrats, the Republicans do now have a veto-proof supermajority.
How fast can they call for a vote in the House? And that's...
Well, and they're in session so long yeah. and moving back and forth so much. It'll be interesting. Does Speaker Moore take on the Speaker Pelosi philosophy? And you have one calendar that you give to the Republicans and one calendar that you give to the Democrats in order to kind of work the system. He could do that. I don't see Tim doing that, but he could absolutely yeah. do that. But I think we have to look at how do we, versus kind of playing games with the attendance policy, how do we get – we just need one Democrat to come over and vote with
right.
us.
Yeah.
And we have to figure out how do we make that happen. Is it through appropriations?
You got to find your Joe Manchin.
100%. And figure out who in rural North Carolina needs some money for some infrastructure.
Yeah.
Who needs some money for some bridges? How do the Republicans work the dollars – That's what happens.
Essentially, that's it, right?
That's what happens. Exactly.
We can help your county. We can help your district. You help us, we'll help you.
Well, and what Roy Cooper did is when Democrats voted or even showing that they might vote against him, gosh forbid that they do, they get called into the governor's mansion and introduced to the person who's going to primary them. And this is how much money Cooper and his machine are going to put behind them getting rid of you. So Democrats have been afraid to step away. There's nothing to fear now because Roy Cooper is not running for reelection. And he doesn't have a bully pulpit. And so how well do Speaker Moore and President of the Senate Pro Tem Berger drive the bus in getting all of their – getting control of their caucus, which they seem to do an incredible job of, I will say that. But how do they get one, two, three Democrats to come over and vote with them on the issues that are most important to North Carolinians? They've got a lot of work that they're going to need to do going into this. The bigger problem I see as we look at all things happening in North Carolina is the 2024 election cycle started today.
That's right.
So is the lens for decision making going to be what I'm running for next? And that is on both sides of the aisle. How does Josh Stein use his position as Attorney General to prepare himself for the gubernatorial run?
Because he wants to run for governor.
100%.
Cooper wants to be the vice president. Is that the deal?
100%. And then, I mean, Cooper would love a Newsom Cooper ticket, right? And while the Democrats, I think, are energized nationally, and Joe Biden, Joe Biden has been
he's
pounding
supposed to
his
be
chest.
Speaking any second.
Oh gosh, well, can't wait for that
coming out of the basement.
He and Fetterman can mumble and bumble their way through 52 states
so
and where I'm at. Interestingly, though, I think we look at Biden is so pleased with what happened. The Democrats are so pleased with what happened. Kevin McCarthy will take the House, but the margin may be 2 or 3. I don't think it'll be more than 5. So he'll have a narrower margin than what Nancy Pelosi has worked off of. The balance
That's
of power
pathetic.
In the Senate
That's
is
pathetic.
In Georgia. And again, we're back here again.
Unbelievable.
And it's assuming that Nevada and Arizona go the way that they're trending right now and that those races get called. So we have the 2024 cycle starting now. What's going to happen in our gubernatorial race here, both on the Republican side and the Democrat side? Democrats are great at clearing the field. How do we draw new maps? Mm-hmm. What happens with those new congressional maps? Does Speaker Moore draw himself a congressional map? I think that's the worst kept secret in North Carolina. And then, but what does he do with Jeff Jackson? Because Jeff Jackson just resounding victory in the 14th. And do you draw Jeff Jackson, who's a rising star in the Democratic Party, into a race with Tim Moore that is a Republican-leaning seat or a heavy Republican seat? Well, if you do that, then Jackson will just run for Attorney General, serve there for 2 years, and then he'll run against Tom Tillis in 2026 and he'll win.
Okay, let's switch, because there's only so much depression I can take out of 24
I know.
Hours.
I'm sorry.
Let's switch to the national game. And so the Senate's still up. We don't know. The House, they'll have 4 or 5 seat advantage. Some people, including my buddy Steve Dace, who will be on next week, is thinking, hey, we might have a 30 seat advantage. That completely collapsed. A lot of people saying that collapsed. And then you've got, here's what Glenn Beck said. 3 important lessons from the midterms. Number one, Ron DeSantis is the model. Be decisive, not divisive. Now, I would add to that, Ron DeSantis is the model. I agree. Be decisive. He was. He just managed. He just governed. All right. He got in there and he governed. And then not divisive, I would say not unnecessarily divisive, but when you manage and you govern like Ron DeSantis, it creates division. But obviously, that didn't stop him because he flipping won by 20 points, which is incredible. Number two, our nation is spiritually lost and our Savior is not on the ballot. We must humble ourselves. And number three, Mitch McConnell was wrong. It's not enough for Republicans to just not be Democrats. So that's, I'm like, okay, I'm with you there, Glenn. Trump. So Trump touts tremendous wins for endorsed candidates, says, why would anything change on 2024 announcement? Talking about next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So what would you tell him if he actually said, hey, Michelle, what do you think I should do with my announcement for president? I mean, first of all, I'd say I would encourage you, sir, to seriously consider not running and then get out of the way for the new boss, the new sheriff in town, who's Ron DeSantis. But what would you tell him? Because he's going to announce next Tuesday. What's the impact that going to have? Because we still have the Senate up and we still have Georgia.
Well, and I would say we're working off the assumption that he would listen to my advice.
Right.
So
we're
working
off
that assumption. I would ask President Trump to sit tight and hold serve until we figure out what's going to happen with the balance of power in the Senate.
He has nothing to lose by waiting 30 days.
Not a thing. And America has a lot to lose because if Kevin McCarthy is working off a very slim margin, Chuck Schumer is still in charge of the Senate, or we end up with a 50-50 best case scenario Senate and Kamala Harris is the deciding vote. Joe Biden is still sitting in the White House. Nothing good comes of him making that announcement next week. I would ask him to sit tight and wait. We need to see what's going to happen in Georgia. And we know the Trump effect last time in the runoff. We had two runoffs last time in, as we know, in Georgia, and the Trump factor was significant. And I don't – one of the things that I would say is the Democrats are baiting him. I believe it full on that the Democrats are baiting him. They want a rematch.
Sure.
100%. And when I saw Ron DeSantis and his wife and his children on stage last night when he – won, and you know they called that race so quickly, and Republicans just cleaned up.
Oh my goodness!
And they won
Miami-Dade,
Hispanics, minorities. They picked up four congressional seats.
This is crazy.
It was the model by which all states should be looking.
Yeah.
The North Carolina GOP needs to be looking at what they did in Florida, and what happened in Ohio. You look at those two states; those were huge, bam, red, high impact.
Yeah.
We need to be looking forward. And when I saw Ron DeSantis and his wife and his beautiful children up there, I said, she looks like a first lady.
Yeah, doesn't she?
And we need to put up a candidate that will win. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a zero-sum game. You either have 100% of the
right.
power or you have zero. 100 or right, zero.
Right, exactly.
There's nothing in the middle. You know, we don't grade politics on a curve. You either get it all or you
get
nothing.
Yeah, you win or you lose. It's one or the other.
So I think we've got to look at where does the party go from here? Ron DeSantis is obviously the future of the party. We had some, you know, pretty good gubernatorial wins. I think we're going to maybe get Lisa Murkowski out in Alaska, but they have the kookiest, wackiest voting
I've kooky.
Ever seen.
And then we'll see what happens with Carrie Lake.
We'll see what happens
I feel
Carrie
good
Lake.
About Carrie Lake. You don't.
I don't.
In terms of winning.
I don't.
We both think she's a fabulous candidate.
I think she's amazing. I think she is an amazing candidate. I think she is an incredible leader, a superstar. We had some other superstar women that lost yesterday that I hope will stay in the fight.
Did Boebert lose?
She was losing.
We'll have to check and see
if
she lost.
We'll check during the break.
Yeah. And so there's a lot to process there. The one thing that I can remind everybody is that 1 Timothy chapter 2 still applies, praying for those in authority over us so that we can live quiet and peaceable lives. Whether you like them or not, whether you voted for them or not, whether they're blue or red is irrelevant. We need to be praying for all these people. Number one, for their salvation. Number two, for wisdom to try to govern anywhere close to what God would have. We'll be right back. All right, here's a little challenge. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, here with my friend and sister in Christ, Michelle Woodhouse. Here's a little challenge. I was watching the Blaze coverage last night because my buddy Steve Dace is on there, and we were able to get some text exchanges in here and there while he's doing the show, which was funny. And man, he was mad. He was struggling. And at one point, Jason Whitlock, who's a believer, was very successful in the sports world and sports broadcasting, and then just really felt convicted about what he was doing with his faith. And so he moved into the political arena. He's got a really popular show on The Blaze. And he got into it with a anarchist who happens to be kind of a conservative unbeliever. And they got into it. And they're sitting right next to each other. And at one point, Jason Whitlock drops the F-bomb. And I was like, whoa, did that just happen? And it did. And a little while later, he left the set to go get himself under control and came back. And the reason I bring that up is when these things are going on, and we're talking about Trump or DeSantis or right or left or blue or red or America or whatever, as followers of Jesus Christ, the world should not be able to get under our skin that much. And that's a battle. It does for me. That's why sometimes on Friday I said it's Snarky Friday, because I get so tired of swimming in this muck by Friday that I just get all snarky and my attitude goes into the toilet. And I struggle with that stuff. That's just part of the struggle we have. But we have to remember that our Christianity needs to rise above all that stuff. And especially this time of year in a political season when the world is going crazy and the country's worried and they hate each other, we need to be those people outside the crowd, and they're like, what's up with that person standing over there? Mm-hmm. What? Well, you're engaged, but you're not controlled by it. You're upset, but you're not mad. You're concerned, but you're not hopeless. And that's our role. We're not the right. We're not the left. We're the way. We're a separate party.
We're the light.
And we have to remember that. So I'm going to tee this up, and we'll just kind of talk as Christians predominantly in this fourth segment. This was Steve Dace earlier today. I love this guy. We've been texting back and forth today because we're both in a really bad mood. He'll be on next week. The polling industry in this country, like almost everything else, is broken. And he's one of the best analysts out there. After decades of overestimating Democrat support, they now finally way overestimated GOP support. Even pollsters that had recently proven reliable got it way wrong. The exit polling showed Republicans getting 13% of blacks and 40% of Hispanics, both higher than normal. 59% of whites with 73% of angry, disappointed where the country was. Did these results look like those exits? Obviously not. Those of us who do data model analysis may need to consider not doing so moving forward. I know I am. This is Steve Dace. Like many other things in this rapidly declining culture, that information methodology is simply not reliable. Maybe I'll spend even more time on theology, even less on analysis. I'm going to get into that. I'll explain that. Which brings us back to being pilgrims. If you live in a traditional blue state that didn't flip red in this cycle, given the brink of societal collapse whereupon, you need to consider that you live in a forsaken land. When you see the abomination of desolation, get out. Nobody loves us more than Jesus, and even he said that there is a point when you kick the dust off your sandals and move on. The hearts are hardened, and the time we haven't isn't indefinite, the time we have. Instead, redeem the time, for the days are evil. Like the pilgrims whose holiday you're about to celebrate, get out and go somewhere new where you can be free. You are wasting your citizenship where you are, and we need you. We are in Helm's Deep mode now. That's a Tolkien reference. We need all the bodies we can get. So he's talking about less analysis, more theology. And when I was texting him earlier today, I said, dude, you're the best theologian on the Blaze Network, which is why you're there. And he was talking about Romans 1 last night, and today I talk about Romans 1 regularly. And that's what happens to a culture that rejects God. The God that they know exists, by the way, Michelle, God's the 800-pound gorilla in the room, because he said it right in Romans 1. I made my existence plain. You look up at the starry sky, you look at the ocean, you look into a fire, you look into a microscope or a telescope, God's existence is plain to you. So that men are without excuse. So he's the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and everybody knows he's there. So there's no such thing as an atheist. An atheist is just an agnostic with an attitude problem. So then what do? You don't want God to be real, because with God comes the moral law, and with moral law comes judgment. So you put your fingers in your ear and you go, blah, 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 blah. And then you suppress that truth because you don't like it. You replace it with a lie. And then once you choose teams, you're down with that until God moves on your behalf. But you're going to go down with that team and down with that ship no matter how crazy it is. So it doesn't matter how bad the culture is, how bad the economy is, or anything else, or CRT, or drag queens twerking in front of first graders and mom giving the first grader a dollar bill to stick in the G-string of the drag queen, which is happening. They cannot change unless God changes them. And that's a reprobate mind, Romans 1, that cannot function logically. So you look at them and go, Michelle, these people are crazy. And I say, yeah, they're crazy. You know what crazy is? Crazy is being out of touch with reality. Mm-hmm. You know what reality is? Reality is that which is true. Well, what is truth? Well, now you're Pontius Pilate. And we're back to the same thing we've always been at since man got kicked out of the garden. Capital T truth, God's truth. Little t truth, man's truth. You live in a Romans 1 culture and a Romans 1 country, and what do you expect? This is what you get.
This is what you get.
Isn't that enlightening? Don't you feel better?
No. My short answer is no. But, you know, the big question then becomes, where do we go now?
Right. What do you do?
Where do we go now? What's the what are the next steps? And
move to Pennsylvania?
No.
Cut out the power? Be on a farm? That's appealing in one direction. But on the other side, I'm commanded to love my neighbor as myself.
Absolutely.
Not run away from my neighbor.
Absolutely. And how do we as Christians get our fellow brothers and sisters in Christ to engage in the political process when we have church leaders that are not charging their flock to do it?
Yeah.
And if there was ever an election, where the Christian army should have been marching to the polls, it was yesterday.
Oh, you have half of self-professed born-again Christians, evangelicals, aren't even registered.
No, yeah.
Because they go, well, I don't think we're supposed to be involved in politics. Really? What other areas of life do you cut the gospel off from? What other areas of life do you divorce your Christianity from besides politics?
Well, and there's nothing scripturally to support that.
Nothing.
That argument.
Be ye separate. Right, from sin. Be, you're in the world, not of the world. He never tells you not to be in the world. That's where the Mennonites and those guys get it wrong. I appreciate the heart of what it is that they're doing. Those are the ultimate separatists, the pilgrims, the Puritans. But they're wrong. We're supposed to be in the world, not of the world. But in it, we are.
Well, and we can't bring light to it if we're not in it. And when...
Don't hide your light under a bushel, Michelle.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to start singing a VBS song. I love it. But I do think we have to ask ourselves, where do we go from here? Mm-hmm. Not only as a country, a country that is becoming less and less a Christian country with every passing day.
Yeah.
When you look at, I mean, we've talked a little bit about this, but Vermont, Michigan, California.
Totally bowed down.
Kentucky.
It's killing babies.
Kentucky.
Kentucky.
Kansas. Montana.
All passing major.
Major.
Kill baby legislation.
Major. It was a pro-abortion wave. And if you look at outside of Kentucky and Montana, you look at how that affected all the races around it.
Well, you mentioned the exit polls earlier.
Exit polls.
Because we were told before yesterday that abortion's polling fourth or fifth. But in the exit polls, what happened?
Number two. Inflation, abortion. And I think I look back at when the memo was leaked out of the Supreme Court.
Oh, man.
Republicans had an opportunity. The right to life community had an opportunity to take control of the narrative, and we didn't.
Yeah.
And then the Democrats took control of the narrative, and all of a sudden, you have young women believing, and let's face it, the group we lost, unmarried young women, unmarried women, we lost that group. We won minorities in record numbers, but we lost unmarried women. And this is the issue. This is the issue.
Yeah, because 65-70% of the country does not want to get rid of abortion.
And we let the left create this narrative that the Republicans want to limit all of your reproductive rights. Because now they call it reproductive rights instead of abortion.
Right, of course.
Interesting.
Including, but, like, contraception.
Yeah, that we the next thing you know, we couldn't have contraception. There weren't going to be interracial marriages.
Right.
We were going to out. They and Republicans never stopped that snowball from going
and
down
called
the mountain.
Barbara Streisand on all that
they
stuff.
They needed to call Barbara Streisand. I don't know that she would have answered, but they needed to call her.
Yeah, and you just and my son noticed this on Twitter. He's like, you know, I'm seeing a lot of conservatives on Twitter right after the Dobbs decision. Talking about, all right, we need to help these women that are find themselves in these crisis pregnancies and unplanned pregnancies. We need to be their savior, for lack of a better word. We need to help them. He was seeing that on the right, but he wasn't seeing that much on the left. And that was the opportunity.
Absolutely.
Okay, everybody. We understand that this happens. We're not in support of abortion, but we are in support of you. So we want to figure out ways to help you get rid of the obstacles that, because we know that most of you actually do want to keep your children. But you have financial challenges, you have educational challenges, you have family challenges. We want to help you with that. We're pro woman at the same time as being pro baby, and we're going to come after and we're going to help you. We're actually going to use some government dollars to help you.
Well, and we had an opportunity.
They didn't do it.
We had an opportunity in North Carolina to even add more to that story because we are one of the worst states in the country for human trafficking.
Yeah, man.
We had an opportunity to say we are going to stand and protect our communities, and we didn't do that. And the Right to Life community, when you look at organizations like Human Coalition, Right to Life, the Susan B. Anthony list, they're doing incredible work.
Yeah.
Incredible
awesome.
Work. But I think we missed an opportunity with that narrative. Democrats stopped talking about it. Republicans never stepped in.
Yeah.
The only person who stepped in was Lindsey Graham putting forth legislation that then created even more of a groundswell with Democrats, and I think that we're seeing it.
When
exit polling says abortion number two, and it was on the ballot.
It's on the ballot.
The country.
And in a Romans 1 country, they want to hold on to child sacrifice. What's the fix for that? It's the gospel. It's the same fix that it's always been. We need to share the gospel, live the gospel, speak the truth of the gospel into the culture. That's the only hope for America. Not Donald Trump, not the right, not the left, but the same thing it's always been, Jesus Christ. Michelle, thanks for being here. God bless you. Great seeing you.
Thank you, friend. It's always great to be here.
You're welcome. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
another program powered by the Truth Network.